If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
If Donald does win, it'll be awkward at the annual President's Day photo when all the former presidents gather at the White House. How is Barack going to get past the Muslim ban?
You can take the baby and rip the baby out of the womb on the final day, and that's not acceptable.
Those who wish to divorce the church from education started to say, well, this is all very neutral.
When he brings you into that life, he brings you into a place where you'll never need an earthly safe place ever. Ever again.
LCMS Navy chaplains appreciate daily food for thought on Issues Etc.
We've been walking through the various classrooms that you would find at your average college or university, walking in and hearing, so to speak, the kind of objections, the kind of presuppositions that would challenge a person with the Christian mind, the Christian faith there, the various classrooms of, education and history and of biology. We come today to the Sociology 101 classroom. Everybody's got to take this subject. You go in, you don't even know what sociology is or what it's good for, and pretty soon you are hearing ideas of all places in a sociology classroom that are in direct conflict with the Christian faith and with the Christian worldview. It'll be part six of our series, Classroom Apologetics, today, Sociology 101 with Dr. Alvin Schmidt. Welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. A little bit later, Kelly Schumacher will join us. We're going to talk about interpreting art in the church. Just what are you looking at and how do you look at it and understand it? Dr. Ken Scherb will join us for part 42 of our series on Martin Luther and the Reformation, continuing through Martin Luther's treatment of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, beginning at verse 21. Then, the Pope has been in Sweden along with some Lutherans. He has come there to kind of culminate about 10 years of dialogue, even more than that if you count some other conversations, between the Vatican and the Lutheran World Federation representing liberal Lutheranism worldwide. The Pope finally showed up, gave an address, a homily, and a joint statement was signed right there on Reformation Day. Didn't undo the Reformation. No one's claiming that, but they're all claiming that it's represents some kind of a shift on both sides. We'll see what really happened there when Pope Francis visited Sweden on Monday. Dr. Al Culver, Director of Church Relations for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, will be our guest in the last half hour of Issues Etc. Joining us for part six of our series on Classroom Apologetics today, we walk into the Sociology 101 classroom, a sociologist, Dr. Alvin Schmidt, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, and author of numerous books, including How Christianity Changed the World. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you for having me again.
You have both studied and taught sociology for decades. In that career, have you noticed in the scholarship in the classroom a change in the approach?
Yes, it basically began right about the time I finished my PhD at the University of Nebraska, which was in January of 1970. And shortly after that, in the early 70s, sociology began to take over the neo-Marxist view of philosophy and try to incorporate that into all sociological thinking. And basically, mid-1990s, I resigned from all of my sociological professional societies, including the big one, the American Sociological Association, because it was now pushing a totally neo-Marxist agenda where everything was relative, there was nothing absolute anymore, and even the classical theorists that once contributed a great deal to understanding social life and society were summarily ignored or called ideologues or ethnocentrists who basically didn't know what they were doing. And so I resigned from my professional associations, and then a few years later, I retired them from teaching after 36 years.
How would you describe that shift that you noticed? What was the case before, and what became the case in the study and work of sociology afterward?
Well, it's hard to blame or put your finger on one thing. But you had already, for example, in the 1800s, individuals come to the fore who talked about relativism, cultural relativism. You see, there's a great deal of irony involved. The Western scholars, if you will, initially were very interested in understanding non-Western cultures and society, and wanted to look at them objectively. But before long, looking at them objectively, they'd concluded that basically the West was not to criticize the shortcomings of other cultures that didn't do what the Western culture did, no matter where it was. And that led to basically what's called cultural relativism. You couldn't criticize any culture, and as a result of it, the irony was that the West basically undermined its own cultural values by elevating the non-cultural, non-Western cultural values. And that just sort of snowballed ultimately to extreme relativism, which you have today pronounced. For example, in 2002, the Barna Research Group that does national research, for example, found how this has even invaded Christians. In 2002, only 32% of adults believed there were moral absolutes, and only 9% of the teenagers held it. This is already 14 years ago. It's probably worse. And if you step outside the Christian realm, 60% of Americans over 35 embrace moral relativism, and 75% do so between the ages of 18 and 35, the millennials. So you can see what's happened, and sociology obviously contributed to that, but so did psychology. They have all basically been tarred with the brush of neo-Marxism today, namely that religion was the opiate of the people, and that anybody who didn't accept that or believe that, and Marx introduced a concept that really took hold called false consciousness. If you didn't believe what Marx wrote or what the neo-Marxists were saying, you were simply guilty of false consciousness or false thinking, and you had to get rid of that. The assumption was that all people were basically alienated, given to their class position deciding. That comes from Karl Marx. And you weren't to respect any. And by the way, if everything is relative, there was nothing really to respect except your own conclusions.
I don't know if you mentioned him earlier, but if you haven't, please do. Who was the French sociologist by the name of Durkheim?
Durkheim was a very famous sociologist in France and died in 1917, sort of near the end of World War I. He is an individual who grew up from Jewish background, a long line of rabbis and so on. And basically, he was, in some ways, he was quite conservative because he was often credited with introducing functionalism. In other words, what people do in society, they do it because it serves certain needs, certain functions, which today, by the way, is totally rejected in sociology by the neo-Marxists and so on down the line. But he also, for example, he wrote a whole lengthy book, The Elementary Forms of Religious Life. And in that, as well as others, basically, he argued that there was no value, profane or sacred, that was intrinsically so. It was simply a creation of society that something was sacred or profane. Profane was the opposite of anything sacred, for example. And that didn't necessarily mean it had to be a religious item. For example, he would say that the American flag that we salute and put our hand on the chest and say, would be a sacred society. It reflects certain values in society. But there's nothing intrinsically true about the stars and stripes that makes it sacred. It's society that projects that onto that object. And, of course, the same is true with any kind of religious belief. He argued the same way. So there was, in other words, there was nothing absolute. It's society created what was profane, what was sacred. And ultimately, what it really meant, there were no absolutes behind anything, for example. And this, I was a product and also part of the Enlightenment. So that's basically what his contribution was. He did some excellent research. For example, one of the most classic study on suicide, which is totally ignored and never recognized in our day and age today, indicated that suicide was not basically caused what most people think. It had nothing to do with, for the most part, with mental problems, which is a conclusion we've made today. And he documented this statistically from studying Western European countries from Census Bureau and the like. And it was published back in the early 1900s and still is a classic. So he did a lot of good things, but the basic premises that he had, that actually, put it another way, society was a religious phenomenon, or society was basically a given group's religion, because everything that people worshipped that was sacred came out of a social interaction of given collectivities wherever they were.
What is the role of the ideas of Karl Marx in sociology? Are they critically evaluated? Has it found its way in? How would you describe it?
You mean, is it critically evaluated today?
Yes.
Not by very many. Not in the social sciences or in the behavioral sciences. And even in the historical realm, it isn't really. Our society thinking today has a lot to do. For example, you've heard the phrase, everything is political. That comes from Karl Marx. So everything is basically political. Even the outside of the so-called political realm, in church organizations, in community organizations, when people disagree, everything is seen as political. Well, that's an exaggeration. But one of the things that Karl Marx is famous for is that he said, it is not the consciousness of people that determines their being or existence. Rather, it is their social being and existence that determines their consciousness. Again, a very subtle way of saying there is nothing absolutely true. Truth comes out of social experience. And when you say, for example, it contradicts exactly what we call biblical revelation. See, these people had no use for that concept of biblical revelation. There is, in reality, there really is no God who could reveal information, as Lutherans argue, by the prophets in the Old Testament and the apostles in the New Testament. That is summarily not even considered, because everything comes out of people's zits and leben, if you will, their social situation in life and wherein they find themselves. And that's what determines what's right, what's wrong, and therefore it's never absolute, and therefore, bottom line, it's relative.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. It's part six of our series, Classroom Apologetics Today, Sociology 101. Talk a little bit about that idea that Marx introduced, that society shapes the individual, after this. Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale is both online and in store. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. November the 1st through the 8th. You'll find major cost savings on books, music, Bibles, educational resources, and more. Concordia Publishing House's fall warehouse sale at cph.org and at 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale, November the 1st through the 8th.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's our series, Classroom Apologetics. Today we're in the sociology classroom. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is with us. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of numerous books, including How Christianity Changed the World. Before the break, you were talking briefly about Karl Marx, and it seems as though in the sociology classroom, this idea drawn from him and others that society shapes the individual is a dominant idea. Where would Marx say that society itself comes from?
Well, you see, they often said we can't really find the origin, so we're not going to look at it. We can't find it, we can't determine it, and that was Durkheim's position too. The origin is basically ignored because, the people who wrote about it were speculating, theorizing, and therefore they're really, what they say is no more valid than what we say by ignoring it.
You say that there is a quote from Karl Marx that very well explains not only his worldview, but how it has shaped the task of sociology today. What is it?
It's basically this. The task of education is not to understand the world, but to change it. That's a key statement. On the side of my ad, that explains an awful lot what's going on in our universities today. It's not to educate, to help people understand the world, but to change it, and hence students are to promote all kinds of so-called politically correct policies. That's at the core of Marxism, and that's very much the core today, not only in sociology, but basically in the entire humanities, whether it's psychology or just the humanities in and of themselves, even in history. It just permeates the entire academic institution today outside of physics and chemistry, perhaps.
So this idea of the social consciousness that Durkheim, that he introduced, how do we find that manifested in sociology today and in the sociology classroom?
Well, we find it, for example, basically that whatever value you hold to is one from your social experience. And you see it manifested today, for example, in the phenomenon that you have today with on campuses, you no longer permit free speech. Why? Because my value, given student value, is important to somebody else. And if I offend that person, a word that is used ad nauseum, I'm offended by this, I'm offended by that, and it's always a one-way street, Christian position is offensive, but their non-Christian position, vis-a-vis the Christian, is not offensive. And so some analysts today are rightly talking about our society when we are. We're attacking the First Amendment. And if things continue to go the way they are, and what is also being recognized, cultural relativism ultimately leads to totalitarianism. This is an excellent example of what happened with Nazi Germany and Stalinism in communist Russia. And this is why, for example, you had individuals like Lenin say, the only thing that is absolute is to destroy the past that has alienated people in their working classes and so on and on. That's the only thing that's absolute. The Nazis said something similar. They said, truth is only that which serves the Nazi party.
Dr. Schmidt, sociologists not only study human behavior, they also study human misbehavior, even things that are criminal. Mm-hmm. And for the modern sociology, that perversion of sociology you've been talking about here, what constitutes a criminal act? Is there any kind of objective morality at work here?
No, there isn't. And here is basically how one can put it. Durkheim, again going back to him, said an evil or a criminal act does not shock the common social conscience because it is evil and criminal in and of itself, but rather it is criminal or evil because it shocks the people. You see what this means? No absolute from the outside. Like thus saith the Lord, you shall not murder, you shall not kill. No, it's given, and you know, sometimes in reality there's a certain amount of truth to this, but to say all morality that way, namely simply because it shocked the social setting, makes a act criminal. If it doesn't shock them, it's accepted. For example, what's happening today with homosexuality is an example, the gender bender philosophy. It no longer shocks us, therefore it is no longer evil or bad. So again, what's right or wrong comes out of society's reaction to given behavior. It is not outside of the human being. It reminds one even of Immanuel Kant, who said that truth is in the subject, not outside of the subject. You see, and that is totally, well, subjectivism, totally removed from any form of absolute right or wrong. It is all determined in the sociological way of explaining it as a result of how a given society or social entity responds to the behavior. If it shocks that group, it's evil. If it doesn't, it's not evil. In other words, God's out of the picture. He doesn't define what's right or wrong like the Ten Commandments do.
A follow-up on that, can a coherent sociology be done without the sociologist himself, at least at some point, making judgments like that? In other words, saying there are acts that are intrinsically criminal.
Yeah, your point's well taken. No, you can't. But they don't recognize that.
Talk about this cultural relativism in a little more detail. It goes into, as you say, not only values, but beliefs are now considered to be relative. Practices, one's laws, the mores, all of them seem to be relativized.
Yes, and you see this today, for example, with our so-called gender bender phenomenon going on today. There's nothing absolute anymore. Even the creation of male and female, as it says in the Bible, God made male and female, is now summarily ignored. There can be a third and a fourth sex, or whatever I, as an individual, define myself to be. So you have Bruce Jenner defining himself as a female now, opting for a sexual or operation. And you see where we are today. Similarly, it's true relative to the phenomenon of homosexuality. It's no longer a wrong behavior. It's no longer something that violates nature, when even science tells us that is a violation of nature, for example. And the phenomenon of AIDS is an example that homosexuality is contrary to nature. It's also interesting, if you go all the way back to Plato before the birth of Christ, the Greek philosopher, even though he had favored homosexuality, he nevertheless ironically called it paraphysin in Greek, which means contrary to nature. Even then, they still, Plato held it, but today to say homosexuality is contrary to nature simply makes you or me who says it a bigot, because it conflicts with cultural relativism. There, namely, there is no such thing as anything that's absolute.
Do you think that people are aware the degree to which culture shapes their beliefs, shapes
No.
their values and practices?
No, not at all. This is one of the things I used to tell my students many, many times. That if, and I use this kind of analogy, if fish could think, the last thing a fish would discover is water. Similarly true with the human being. who, however, can think, but nevertheless never discover that they swim in the water of culture. The average person has no cultural consciousness. They use the word culture. By the way, the word culture has become rather common only within the last 30, 40 years. Before that, it was only found in academic contexts. But today, everybody uses culture. They don't know what it means. They can't give you a definition of it, but they all use the term. So basically, that's where we are today. People don't have a cultural consciousness. This is, you know, whether it's good behavior or bad behavior that they practice and believe in, they are not aware of how that takes place, namely how culture influences, shapes their ideas, their actions, and so on down the line. That is a big, I don't know what you want to call it, a mystery or an enigma. The average person is not conscious of his culture. And even myself, who studied sociology now for almost 50 years, have to stop and think at times, hey, listen, I wasn't culturally conscious about given behavior that I just enacted or something that I stated that reflects a certain cultural value. For the most part, we almost have to be unaware of being culturally conscious, because if you're totally culturally conscious, you couldn't operate in society. Nobody would accept you. You would have trouble accepting anything yourself. Therein lies the irony.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. It's part six of our series on classroom apologetics today, Sociology 101. On the other side of the break, what is the basic task of sociology and what has that task been turned into? Christians young and old are increasingly pressured to change their beliefs. That's why St. Jude said we need to contend for the faith once for all delivered to the saints. At the San Antonio Worldview Conference, Confessional Lutherans Jonathan Fisk, Jay Weber, Ryan McPherson, and Craig Parton will unmask the false, direct us to Christ and His Word, and defend the faith. The San Antonio Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 11th, San Antonio, Texas. Visit worldviewsa.org. worldviewsa.org.
Our historic biblical Lutheran theology is more urgently needed at this moment than at any other moment in history.
Pro-life leader Dr. Lawrence White on why you should support Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. is in the forefront of that movement, in the extension of the kingdom of God, the proclamation of the Lord Jesus Christ, the demonstration that our Lord Jesus is not irrelevant to what's going on in the culture, that our historic biblical Lutheran theology is more urgently needed at this moment than at any other moment in history, and Issues Etc. is in the forefront of that movement.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Defending life from beginning to end, Issues Etc. Thanks for your support.
St. Jacobi Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Wisconsin has a special guest each and every week. It isn't you, but it is Jesus Christ. He is a guest, and he is also the one who comes to serve you with his preached word in his broken body and shed blood. You are invited to be served by Jesus on Saturday evening at 6:30 and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Visit www.stjakobi.org for more information.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, Ad Crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift-buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Dr. Alvin Schmidt about the Sociology 101 classroom, part of our series on classroom apologetics. Dr. Schmidt, I guess we probably need to kind of put it in the starkest of terms. What's the basic task of sociology, and what has that task been turned into?
A very good question. The sociology was to understand people's values, and basically what it really started off, it looked at societies, for example, and a famous German sociologist by the name of Tanis came up with two types of societies. There was the Gemeinschaft society that was small, personal, which you had, and then in time, it because of urbanization, you developed Gesellschaft societies, which was the very opposite of a Gemeinschaft society. The Gesellschaft, and by the way, these terms are in the introductory sociology word in the German. They're been translated, but they don't quite do justice. So the Abbey's introductory sociology book will use Gemeinschaft and Gesellschaft concept. The Gesellschaft society is now basically becoming urban. It is large. Life is impersonal. There isn't this Gemeinschaft feeling. You see, it's interesting when we use the word Gemeinschaft. As you know, the German word for a congregation is called a Gemeinde. All the way back to the Greek meaning of koinonia, there was a close cooperation, a feeling of commonness, a feeling of oneness. That's the Gemeinschaft society. But as you move over now to the urban society, life is impersonal and removed. We don't know the person who lives next door, and we don't care as well. And that was the emphasis of early sociologists, and it was a tremendously helpful insight. It helped us understand how societies at times grew and developed and became more complex, which takes you to the Gesellschaft society, the Gemeinschaft society. Life was rather simple and close-knit, for example, like small tribal groups. There were a Gemeinschaft society. But once in time, as society developed and became urbanized, and I suppose that's why a guy by the name of Jacques Ellul once wrote, for example, a city basically criticizing urban society and that God never really meant it. He argued people to live in an urban society. But that's what's happened with the growth and industrialization of society, particularly in the West, that life has become extremely urbanized and extremely complex. And that was a contribution that sociology started with. And even Durkheim did some of that, but then later on they also veered off into other paths.
So make the case that the young Christian student who is want to do so should study, but study critically, this task of sociology.
Yeah, quite right. And that is exactly what's not encouraged today. You cannot criticize anymore because you immediately will be accused of offending somebody. And we have internalized this sort of, I basically become a cultural value. We've internalized it unconsciously again that I shouldn't offend anybody. This means that I as a Christian won't even say what Christianity is all about, why I believe, for example, what I believe, and I can support it with a lot of evidence. That's immediately offensive, and the average Christian isn't even going to go there to try and do that. And so basically, the left, if you will, I call it the left, has basically become dominant and taken over. And the average student, including Christians, for example, are swept up in it and really aren't aware of it. And even, I would even argue, we in the church have been kind of asleep at the switch on this whole phenomenon. Even in our, it's evident in our church, colleges, and universities. You don't see, for example, they all offer sociology courses, but they don't really critique and criticize them in terms of the new philosophies that has been woven into every sociology textbook.
Finally then, Dr. Schmidt, what advice can you give a Christian student who is sitting in that secular sociology 101 course under that liberal secularist Professor?
Well, that's a tremendously good question. Off the top of my head, I would say that the student needs to be aware that when he goes to the universities today, that he's no longer going to be exposed to critical thinking. Critical thinking today is not accepted. It used to be that universities existed, for example, to pursue the truth, to have debates. Now, for example, if you come as a person who is, for example, opposed to abortion or homosexuality, you will not even be invited to speak on a university campus, nor will you survive very long as a faculty member. You will not get tenure. You will not be promoted. You won't be even hired. My friend Louis Spitz, who used to be at Stanford University, who died a number of years ago, said, you know, there are 18 of us in the history department. I'm the only Republican. That's what's called diversity. Well, in many cases, that's not an exaggeration. It's probably even worse. Universities today are all left-minded, espousing whether it's neo-Marxism or basically anti-Christian values, and the students have a hard time surviving in that environment, and they have not been adequately taught, even before they go to university, in the home or in the church, to know what they're going to confront when they're out there. And I don't know what other advice to give. They need to critically think on their own and be strong and oppose a position, but not many people are able to do that. Most people like to conform. They like to be, we all know about high school cliques. What's involved in high school cliques? Wanting to belong, and you sacrifice certain beliefs so that the peer group will accept you. Well, in the universities today, that peer group is only extended and enlarged relative to all the other students you associate with in class or outside of class. So Christians are fighting an uphill battle, and many times they're really not informed of what they are going to encounter or how they can counter what they will encounter. They walk into this absolutely unprepared, and therein means that we as Christians outside of the university and in the church have not helped them any either.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, author of numerous books, including How Christianity Changed the World. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Schmidt, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me.
On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about church art and how one interprets it, the symbolism in church art. Kelly Schumacher of Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts will be our guest.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. Paul's Lutheran, Coleman, Alabama. Faith Lutheran, Waterloo, Iowa. Emmanuel Lutheran, Everett, Washington. Lake George Lutheran Chapel, Fremont, Indiana. Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Snohomish, Washington. Faith Lutheran, Buford, South Carolina. Trinity Lutheran, Great Falls, Montana. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Westview, Pennsylvania. St. Paul Lutheran, International Falls, Minnesota. Redeemer Lutheran, Marshalltown, Iowa. Trinity and Grace Lutheran, Bear Creek, Wisconsin. St. Paul Lutheran, Sevierville, Tennessee. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Sherman, Illinois. And Zion Lutheran, Dexter, Iowa. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. The Issues Etc. 300.
Delivering apologetics artillery right on target. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry, lcms.org/deaconess.
Are you looking for Christmas cards that combine beautiful art with a clear Christian confession? Emmanuel Press offers Christ-centered, affordable cards in a variety of designs.
You'll find cards with stained glass, illumination, German frescoes, and other unique artwork found only at Emmanuel Press. Visit their website, emmanuelpress.us, EMMANUEL Press.us.